GalaxyCon Live is the place for you to hear about fandom from the celebrities who bring geek culture to life.
Welcome, friends and fans, to another edition of GalaxyCon Live, where we are bringing the convention experience directly to you. And today, we are going back to the galaxy far, far away with several fantastic guests. So without further ado, let's commune with the Force and bring them out. Our first guest is an actor and producer whose roles include Young Justice, Green Lantern, and Arcane. Today he joins us to discuss the role of Senator Lex Bonteri. Please welcome Jason Spezak.
Well, hello.
So, I play Lex Bonteri on Clone Wars and Zin Palmas and a few other roles on that series. And I Silco on Arcane, which is popular right now, too.
So. Absolutely. And speaking of Arcane, you're going to be rejoining us again next week. We're having an Arcane event with several of your castmates from that amazing series.
So that
we'll get a chance to talk about it then. And I'm hoping someday maybe we could do a DC animated event, because I'd love to talk to you about your contributions.
Yeah, that's right, because I played the Joker, too. So
Yeah, you've done a lot of the Joker. You know, you played Green Lantern. Not in Green Lantern, because you played Razor in Green Lantern. That's
But I played Green Lantern on DC Superhero Girls.
So. Yes. It's the DC universe, and
yeah, it is.
That's what it is. But today we're here to talk about the Star Wars universe. So let's go on with our next guest, because she is an actress whose credits include Gilmore Girls, Final Fantasy VII, and various characters on Conan. Today she joins us to discuss the role of Princess General Leia Organa. Please welcome Julie Dolan.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yay. Woo.
Live from the forest moon of Endor.
Yes. It matches my outfit, and being Irish, I like the green.
There you have it. Julie, how are you doing in your corner of the world?
You know, I just moved to the southeast of the United States, and it's being a California girl and now living in Georgia. What a difference. So I'm just got here. So I'm kind of getting used to it and getting used to the cold. And it's not really that cold. Apparently that's 40 degrees is the coldest it gets here, maybe less. And I'm doing okay.
All right. Right on. And real quick, just because it's on your listing, were you really in Blood Beach?
Yeah. I was in Blood Beach, and I did not get killed.
That's
wow.
That's
a short list.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. So let's go on with our next guest. Our guest is a sound editor and actor whose tremendous work on the engineering side of the recording booth includes WandaVision, The Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, and just about anything with the word Star Wars in it over the past decade. Today, he joins us to discuss his work on both sides of the glass as voices of several Star Wars characters, including Bib Fortuna, IG-88, and of course, General Grievous. Please welcome Matthew Wood.
It's fine. It's all good. Exciting.
Speaking of all good and exciting, our next guest is an actor and singer whose amazing body of work includes The Pirates of Darkwater, Darkwing Duck, and he has been the voice of Disney's Tigger and Winnie the Pooh for decades. Today he joins us to discuss the role of pirate and independent entrepreneur Hondo Onaka. Please welcome back Jim Cummings.
Boom, boom, quack, and the crowd went mild. All right. Hello, everyone. Good day.
Hey, Jim, how you been?
Oh, superfluous. Thank you. You know, I always answer that way because it sounds good. And then they look it up and they go, wait a minute.
There's no
but, all is well on the Western front here. Another day in paradise, right?
Everything's doing okay. And in these crazy days, okay is the new awesome.
That's right. I'll take that.
Absolutely. Well, Jim, always glad to have you back. Glad to have you in good health and
great
good
to be
spirit.
Here.
And finally, he is an actor and writer whose body of work includes The Vault, American Princess, and Bucket and Skinner's Epic Adventures. Today, he joins us to discuss the role of Jedi Padawan Ezra Bridger. Please welcome Taylor Gray.
What's up, guys?
Taylor.
Happy, Saturday? Happy Saturday, everybody.
Happy Saturday, indeed.
Happy
Taylor.
Saturday.
How you doing, boss?
I'm doing well. Another day in paradise. Getting through.
That's all we can ever ask for. Well, Taylor, thanks for joining us. And panelists, welcome to the GalaxyCon virtual stage. Our team is going through the chat room right now, pulling out the questions for you. In the meantime, I'd just like to throw this out for each of you. What has been the most interesting thing about being a part of the Star Wars universe?
That me and Taylor shop at the same green screen store.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. I would say this.
That's exciting.
Yeah, the fans, to be honest. I mean, the fans, it's incredible. You do your work in a room and you're so far away. You know, it's not like theater. You're detached from the audience. And then when you get a chance to, you know, interact with them, you know, even in this virtual environment, it's almost like you get to hear the voices of the people that whose lives you touch. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I first started working in the Star Wars universe, I didn't even know what cosplay was. I had never been to a convention and had no idea that I would be going as a guest. And a lot of my voice actor friends that worked on Clone Wars said, oh yeah, you'll be going. Oh, I said, we'll see. Maybe I'll get asked. And I haven't stopped. And it's just meeting the fans is probably one of the best things. But also working with all the actors too, it's so great.
Yeah. I mean, also being involved in something that's bigger than any one of us, bigger than the director all the way down to the fan or whoever. I mean, on the entire spectrum of everyone who's involved in Star Wars, it's all bigger than any one of us. And it's something we contribute to and try to do our best with. And you know, it opens a lot of doors for people and it breaks the ice with conversations with people. It's an amazing thing to be part of.
Yeah.
So true.
Yeah, Jim, and you're no stranger to characters and franchises and stuff like that. So what do people at war? It's like, oh, you're Winnie the Pooh, or you're in Star Wars, or you're Darkwing Duck.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like a gift. You know, I've been doing it for so long, and then you know, you audition. I can remember I was sitting in this chair, and when I first read for Hondo. And he took off in a beautiful way that I never would have seen coming. And, you know, Dave Filoni is my patron saint over there. And, you know, everybody's just been so gracious about it. This character, God bless, you know, I never would have, you know, he was going to be in originally two episodes. And then he came in and everybody went, oh, well, how about more of him? And then that turned in, I think, to like five. And then, of course, you know, went into Clone Wars and two series in which he was able to sneak into is like a manna from heaven. So I'm just Mr. Grateful, put it that way. Very, very grateful. Glad to be here.
And I think Mr. Filoni is a saint in many Star Wars fans' eyes.
I'm sure of that. I can't believe that. By the way, if anybody's listening out there, don't you think Hondo should be or should have been in The Mandalorian? Say things like yes.
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 Get out there. Yes. Hey, my girlfriend was in there. Ahsoka.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. That's my girlfriend.
Wait a minute.
What are you talking about? Hey. Trying to move in on my action?
Dude, that hussy.
Killing me.
Oh, boys, easy, yeah.
I'll fight you for that Jedi, pal.
Guy, gentlemen, this is the pathway to the dark side. Speaking of dark side, Taylor, you've had a really interesting run, and Ezra has become such a fan favorite. What's been your takeaway on the character?
I also was not so familiar with how, and I it's foolish of me, how massive Star Wars is and has been. And so playing Ezra, I think I kind of just approached it the way I would any other character. And that was both helpful and also a big surprise when I saw, like, oh yeah, people are watching this no matter what. And as Matthew had said, like, Star Wars is just so much bigger than any 100 people that are working on a show. And that's what's so cool. And so Ezra's just been an amazing character, and it's fun because other shows I've been on have been canceled before it hits however 90 episodes. So the development of a character you don't necessarily always get. You have an arc planned out for how someone will evolve and grow. But with Ezra and Rebels, it was really cool to tell a full story, which I guess is credit to Dave Filoni as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much. And Matthew, I know you were taken completely by surprise by Star Wars fandom, having no idea of it until you started doing the voices. But, you know, we'll get into that.
Yeah, sure. Just a fan myself, yeah.
And for our again, for our audience to let everybody know, Matthew has been instrumental in the audio engineering of so much of Lucasfilm. And absolute props to that. Again, both sides of the glass, sir, you are commended.
Oh, thanks. Thank you. Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. It's a fun job.
Both of them. And we are going to go to audience questions. So let's go ahead and roll our first one. And here's one from Joshua, who wants to know, what is the most challenging aspect of voiceover work?
The heavy lifting.
Making the mic work when you go to a chat show.
Yeah.
I would say if it's voice matching, which is what I did for Leia, it's either you have it in your wheelhouse in your voice or you don't, and you can get close, but you know, I had to, for this, I've done a lot of voice matching. I listen to the original, I talk along with it, I try to match the rhythm, the gait, the emotion, to try to sound like one person. And I did that for Barbara Streisand. I don't sound like, I'm not like a Barbara Streisand impersonator, but they wanted an actress that could match all that for a movie, for looping for her. But if I'm creating a character, if I'm auditioning for an animated show, I mean, you have to come up with the voice. You have to do a backstory. There's a lot of work, just as I'm an on-camera actor as well. And you have to dive into the character and make a lot of choices. So it's a lot of work, and it's not just about, oh, I have a great voice, or a deep voice, or a funny voice. It's being an actor. So there's a lot those auditions.
I find the character work is also, after you do it for a while, you want to find a voice that no one's ever heard. You want to find a voice that you haven't done, and you try to push yourself into, different and new places as best you can. And, the longer you do it, the longer that coattail gets. And that can be a bit of a challenge, especially, if you're working on, characters that are different or quirky. You want them to be unique and yet loved, and fun to listen to and not annoying, right? So that can be a challenge sometimes too.
Yeah, I have a problem. I'm very annoying. So I have to fight that one all the time. That's my biggest obstacle. Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, I don't know. I always, whenever people talk about this, voice acting, I think Jess Arnell has a good way to put it. He said, being a voice actor is a small V, but a capital A. And, you have to get all that through in just the voice. You have to get, trepidation. You have to get every emotion through that. A lot of times, like Clint Eastwood, half his movies, he doesn't say a word. He's just walking around looking grim, and now not so grim, and now he's curious, and now he's, and you got to get all that in almost silently, and the use of pauses is a good way to go. See how I did that? Learning experience there. Yes. And
preach
stuff like that. But yeah, it's just a lot of fun. And I always say instincts are the best stinks. If it sounds good in your head, let it out. You never know. Maybe somebody will buy it.
My marriage.
And you've had experience on both sides of it. There are characters that you have developed out of the get-go, and then there are legacy characters which mm-hmm. you've taken up the mantle of. Again, Winnie the Pooh and singing like Jeremy Irons.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, Jeremy sounded great, didn't he? He was...
I didn't know Jeremy Irons was this good of a singer. Wow.
Yeah, they didn't tell Jeffrey Katzenberg that it was me, because they knew I was in there. Jess Arnell and I sang Hakuna Matata for Ernie and Nathan, because they're not singers, So they said, well, let's just get Jim and Jess in there. And oh, by the way, I wrote the fart verse.
Oh, nice.
Thank you. Were lyrics by me. And they got them. We recorded Hakuna Matata so they could just ride around in their car and listen to it. That way, the way Yankee Doodle Dandy or something, And they said, and I guess Jeremy Irons he had a lot of Marlboros, according to the powers that be. So they said, well, Jim's already here. Let's have him sing it. And so I went in and sang it, and they ended up keeping it. So it was really cool. I got a lot of platinum. That's the only, it's really cool. So keep buying those, by the way. I have no idea if I answered any question in there, but it's fun to hear.
If those are audience maybe scratching their heads, Jim did all the singing for Scar and the Lion King.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
No, that's fine. I don't want to clarify that. Taylor, what's your challenge on voice acting?
I would piggyback on what Jim was saying. It's funny. Rebels was the first voiceover thing I'd ever read for, actually. Everything I'd done has been live action. So I think everyone here probably has some theater training or something. And the realm of that. And you rely on so many parts of you as a person. You have so many tools and faculties, like you said, expressions and physicality and movement. And it was interesting to really funnel that all into just your voice. And so for me, it was a nice learning curve to take certain things that I would rely on, maybe an expression or how I would move or hold myself or a gait, and be like, okay, well, the only way to get this through is through my voice right now. And also I had a terribly difficult time on the first, I would say 5 episodes, where I just would look at everyone that I was recording with and Dave Filoni would be like, hey, that's a great take, but we can't hear half of your lines because you're here and there. So we had this little setup where, like, if I had a scene with someone, I would just move the stand and the mic so that I could look at the person. I mean, I'm in the scene with the person, that I could look at them and speak with them and connect in that way. And I think that was something fun about Rebels. You could feel that it really relied on the rapport of characters in a sense, which was nice. But I mean, it's been an amazing experience.
I remember when we did Rebels, I'm a theater actor. So when we did Rebels, it was like we were doing a play reading. We were all standing next to each other with music stands. And Taylor, you and I were next to each other and we were both looking at each other doing the scene. I felt it made it more real being able to have eye contact with you.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Absolutely. And throughout all of Rebels, I think that's the thing that I fall back on most, is like the connection between all the characters was really strong and you could feel that. And that's something with the early Star Wars films that I like so much, is just when they're all in the ship together and the banter, that's what does it for me more than anything, honestly. But that's probably just down to taste. But I've only done one other voiceover thing since, and I was in a room by myself and I was like, oh, shoot. I was like, this is much more difficult.
I'm sure they're out there, but I haven't personally encountered any voice actor who's said like, no, I want to be in the booth by myself alone, looking at my blips and everything else. Everybody loves that energy. Everybody loves just being in there. It just the guides and the performance and the tightness. So there you have. Oh, actually, Matthew, what's your biggest challenge on it?
You know, I came to Lucasfilm when I was pretty young. I was like 17 years old, and I was doing like community theater, and I enrolled in this ACT in San Francisco, and I've always been trying to do plays and whatnot. So George knew I had an acting bug, but I got this job at Lucasfilm, and it was very technical in the sound part of it. And then I just started merging those two things. So I was merging my sound editing and design with some voice acting, because that was the easiest thing to do for me, because I was sort of stationed at Skywalker Ranch. I couldn't really physically go anywhere else. But merging the technical and the creative acting has been something. Most of my characters in my early work were droids or creatures or something, so I could actually use the microphone with technology to manipulate voices in real time. So that was a lot of my first work, and so merging those two fields was a challenge, but also completely gratifying. And it seems to work both parts of your brain, technical and creative. And so I've landed at a good place at Lucasfilm. George Lucas was very open to people not just being pigeonholed into one job. So I'm grateful for his openness and all the opportunities he lent me and others in the company.
I think myself and the audience were equally grateful to Mr. Lucas for everything he's done.
Absolutely.
Even THX-113A.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joshua, great question. Thank you. What do we have next? From Century Triclops. What is your character's favorite food? And you could pick any of your Star Wars characters you want, or if you want to go through multiple, go right ahead if you have multiple.
Oh, God.
General Grievous, I mean, Padawan braid soup, I think, is what he likes. Yeah.
That's dark.
Stirred with a lightsaber.
Yeah.
I feel like mine's fairly simple, because he actually, like, this answer's already there. He, Ezra, loved Melu runs. He was always, I remember we had such a difficult time even saying Melu runs. We argued about it for maybe an hour, how it should be pronounced. But that, I think it's a fruit, I assume.
Yeah.
Well, for me, it's honey, of course.
Yes.
You never know, right?
I love that.
Lux Bonteri probably eats a salad. He's just, you know, salad and like avocado toast. Like,
as far as I don't know, anything fried.
Yes.
I don't think Princess Leia eats. I've never seen her eat anything.
Well, she doesn't go potty.
No.
We know that.
No one eats or goes to the refresher.
Refresher.
I heard it called the convenience. I heard it called it the refresher.
Yeah, refresher was some Star Wars term we've been using over and over in shows now.
I know that's a good way of putting it. All right, Centric Lycops, there you go. I've learned something about the Star Wars universe I didn't know. That's fantastic. What do we have next? Here's one from Trent. What is your favorite aspect on being a part of Star Wars? So maybe a little bit like my earlier question, but if you got anything else to add, go ahead.
16:9, I like more than the 4:3 aspect ratio. Is that what we're talking about? Sorry.
I grew up with Star Wars. I mean, I played with all the toys when I was a kid, and I grew up, you know, the first movie I think was when I was 5, and it was beautiful to watch it and have that story like glued inside my psyche. And what's fascinating is inserting where my character is in the timeline, right? So like there's this fascinating thing because Star Wars is a universe, and I can place Lux Bonteri in this slice of this universe, in this timeline, you know, like it's in existence. And I don't know, that just fascinates the crap out of me.
Jason, did you have a favorite Star Wars toy?
Me? Yeah, I liked the Hoth because I really love Empire Strikes Back, Empire, and I had this Hoth turret. And there's the turrets from Hoth, the rebel turrets from Hoth. I just thought they were like the coolest thing in the world. You could blow it up. And
they came with the probe droid, yeah.
Yeah, just loved it. Yeah. Something about that.
That was a good one. That was a good one. Yeah. Who's got another?
And what was the question again? It was like
favorite relationship to Lux Bonteri.
Yes.
Favorite aspect.
Yeah, I remember an aspect.
No, I just like being a part of this whole community, right? Like, I think I was not in it growing up. I kind of missed it. It's like not listening to the Beatles. You know what I mean? What Star Wars is for film. And so I went from really not being in the community, I think, with like people when I was younger with it to like now I'm in it. So it's pretty fun to have had a full crash course with Dave. And also, I mean, so many people watch and know Star Wars that you can just get on with pretty quickly and share this common amazing thing.
Yeah.
You just gave me a blast.
I think it's just it's an honor. It's an honor for me. You know, I just, you know, to be a little cog in this astonishing machine is it's something I'll just be grateful for forever. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'll take it.
Yeah.
Right on. Julie, anything to add on?
Well, you know, I saw Star Wars when it first came out, but I didn't get hooked. I was more into musicals because I'm a musical theater person and horror films. That was just my thing. So sci-fi wasn't really my thing. But of course, I saw all the movies. And when I won the role of Princess Leia, I knew I had some research to do. So I looked up Wikipedia, everything I could find on Princess Leia. And as an actor, when you're playing a character, you know, you come up with all of your past life and what's going on and who you are and who your parents were and what your goals are. And I had a character to study that all those questions were answered. And I just needed to kind of fit that in to my research and my, you know, background acting check and all that before I did the shows, all this, the projects that I've done. I had to know who I was playing. And that was really exciting to be able to learn all about Star Wars. And when I started doing interviews, people would ask me questions. And I remember publicity department of Lucas was on the phone with me just in case I said anything wrong or I spilled the beans on something. But after about 3 interviews, they said, you know this, you know your stuff, you've done your research, you know, you're not going to say anything wrong, you know your answers. And it felt really good to be able to talk to the fans and know and know the storyline and know where I fit in. So that was a really great aspect for me to be able to develop this character.
Leia was my first heroine. Well, that and Linda Carter, Wonder Woman, which shows you how old I am. But the whole thing is that you've carried the character and you've done absolute justice to Carrie, and you've done absolute justice to yourself in this.
Thank you.
And really, you've done a fantastic job.
Thank you.
And a reminder to our audience, it's no longer Slave Leia, it's now Jabba Slayer Leia.
Yes.
Absolutely. So, Trent, great question. Thank you so much. What do we have next? From Boris the Animal. If your Star Wars character had a hidden talent, what would it be?
Wow.
Hidden talent.
I'm fairly sure that Lux is a great juggler. Like one of those circus sideshow things. He always wanted to just run away and join the circus, but you know, he's got responsibilities and senators, you know, grooming and everything going on. And so he'd be in the far away from any watchful eye.
I could totally see that. I could totally see him going afterwards to one of the circuses in town and in, what's your name? Joe, could you teach me how to juggle? I could see him, bursting. You know.
Yeah. And he has a mask on, you know, he has like,
You got talent, this kid.
To know it's him.
Why don't you join the circus as my apprentice? Like,
Shoot, I have responsibilities.
Yes.
Fine. Well, I'll be over here.
Yeah.
I think the battle droids are frustrated stand-up comics, I think, is what they are. They would love to get a stage, be on stage somewhere, but they just haven't had the opportunity.
In my own headcanon, I keep thinking that their core programming was lifted from some, not a battle droid, but lifted from some other like weird, like entertainment droid or something. Like they used the motherboards of the cheapest ones they could find and just add the programming.
I like that.
Yeah.
Hondo would be a tap dancer. Because he tap dances out of trouble all the time.
Yeah.
You know, whenever something comes up and he's busted, he starts, hold on. Let me get with you. I'll be there in a minute. You know, and he's tap dancing his way out of it. And he, before, you know, they end up owing him money. So it's good.
I miss Hondo. Hondo is such a fun character. Anytime there was stuff, that was always
Hondo.
I love him too.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think, like, with a Jedi, like, I think hidden talents would come up pretty seamlessly, but I feel like Ezra might play like a musical instrument. And I'm thinking, like, there are instruments in Star Wars, but I haven't seen, like, a guitar. Because there's the band, right? In the cantina. I think Ezra would quickly like fit into that.
Yeah, I think Leia's a rock singer. She'd probably be the lead singer of that band in the cantina.
Love it.
There you go.
I like how each actor described their secret passion.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Basically, everybody on this phone call wishes they were whatever they said just now.
Exactly.
We all know that.
That's pretty deep, man, but it's also true.
I want to see Jim tap dance.
Matthew wishes he was a comic. Taylor wishes he could play guitar. Jim wishes he was a tap dancer. Julie wishes she was a rock singer. And Jason wishes he was a juggler. I think it's pretty obvious.
That's pretty good. Let's go on the road. I'll be the opening act for comedy, and then you guys can take over.
There you go.
C-3PO tries to cook to various successes.
Nice.
I see him trying to do tea and stuff too. So, Boris, great question. Thank you for that. And let's roll another one. And here's one from Andrew. If you had the powers of a Jedi, what would you do with that power and why?
I do have the powers of a Jedi. I made him ask that question.
Oh, wow. Oh.
Now how much would you pay?
I don't know.
I would go like probably make a horrible mistake. Yeah, go ahead. I would go Superman 4 Quest for Peace and rid the world of nuclear weapons. There we go.
Ooh. Nice. You're not wasting any time, man. You're going straight.
Just burn them all up.
Everybody but us.
Send them into the sun.
Nobody else.
No, no, all of them, man. We got to be egalitarian. Everyone all up into the sun. There you go.
I struggle with this because, like, part of me wants to have that answer that's like, you know, really get rid of nuclear weapons. But then, like, I'm reading the question and it says, what if you had the power? And I'm thinking, me? If I actually had the power, I would screw up. I would
You'd
do something.
You'd be a juggler.
I would end up on the dark
juggling.
Side because I'd be like ashamed of what I did by accident and like, you know, accidentally killed some people. And like, what would really happen if I had that power? It would just be a crap show. It would be terrible. I mean, dead bodies by accident. Like, I'm so sorry I dropped that ship on you. I am so sorry. Forget it. Pretty much what happened.
I think if I had those powers, I would want everyone to have like a Soylent Green sort of death, where you know, there's no, you choose when you die, you choose how you die, you don't, there's no horrible, horrific car accidents. You choose the place and, you know, music, and you go out with, you know, like in the end of Soylent Green. If you haven't seen that movie, it's
except for the people that I killed by accident, but everybody else.
I'll never understand why he picked orange as his color. I will never understand that. But it's his euthanasia, and he's allowed to pick whatever color he wants. Mm-hmm. Whatever color you want. So, Taylor, you had the power of a Jedi.
Yeah, I thought about this while we were doing the show a lot, because like as Ezra came into that, right, he didn't. Okay, I guess you innately have it, but then as that came to fruition, I was like, well, what would I do if I had the power of a Jedi? And I was pretty dead set on I would not ever use it, and I wouldn't let anybody know. Like, I would just, I just don't think it's going to add too much to anything, and it's too much of a responsibility. And I think it's almost a curse to have as well, because then you have to do so much good, and if you don't, you're letting everybody down.
So you'd be Clark Kent, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, but doesn't he use it? Doesn't he turn into, carry the world?
Yeah, but nobody knows it's him.
Oh, yeah. I guess I would do like little things. Like if I knock something over in the kitchen, I'd catch it midair and be like, all right, well, that's not going to spill. But aside from that, I would never use it.
Fair. We've had this question before, and my two cents is always, it'd be a 40-minute wait for a table. It's like, there's no 40-minute wait for a table. There's no 40-minute wait for a table. You can seat me now. We can seat you now. But I think that would be the path of the dark side. But Andrew, thank you. Great question. And what do we have next? From Andre, if you could create your own lightsaber, what would it look like? And most importantly, what color would it be?
Mine would look like a keytar.
Ooh, that's cool.
Yeah. And it would be white, because I have a white keytar.
Mine would look like a microphone, and so I could work. And then, you know, if I needed to get to be a Jedi really quickly, I could do it. So, like,
what gray color would the blade be?
Oh, the blade. I like the dark saber. I go for a dark saber look.
I was impressed that they were able to bring that into live action.
Yeah,
I thought that was like, that's, you could do that in animation. How are they gonna pull that off? But it worked.
Yeah, I've seen some fan cosplay ones that are pretty cool too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah, very nice, very nice. Taylor, what's your lightsaber look like?
Man, I'm staying true. I got to represent it. The first one that he had has got to be one of the cooler lightsabers that has been in Star Wars because of the blaster aspect of it. It's kind of like, it was in line with him and how cavalier he was. He was just like, screw it, I'm also going to have a blaster on my saber. So I would rock that, and I was like, blue. I thought that was a solid Jedi color.
Yeah. Dig it. Mine would look like a didgeridoo, and it would be plaid.
I'm going to go with a harmonica and a lightsaber and blue. Definitely. Yeah.
Lightsaber band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It
mesmerizes you with the monica. Then,
I always thought my favorite was green, but when I got I saw a Force FX blue saber in the dark, I was like, oh, yeah, I've changed my mind.
Yeah.
I have changed my
blue
mind.
For me.
Yeah. Andre, great question. Thank you. And what's next? Here's one from Linda. How long have each of you been voice acting, or not only to say just acting in general?
Oh, boy. A million years for me. If acting in general, I think it was like 5, did a lot of plays, but voice acting, 1985, my first job, Dumbo Circus.
Nice.
It was for Disney too. So
yeah.
I'm stuck in this rut. I love it.
It's a good rut to be stuck in.
Yeah. Damn right.
Oh, yeah. That's a sizable looking rut.
You got
big. Goes on for decades. Yeah, I was 1997 was my first professional voice acting job, but I've been acting since 7th grade.
Yeah, high school acting, and then a Young Indiana Jones Chronicles in 91, I think. And a person's name was Linda who asked the question. That's my mom's name. So I wonder if that was my mom. I'm not sure if it is. I didn't tell her I was going to be on this.
I started when I was a kid. I was actually started as a dancer. I was born and raised in the Valley, the San Fernando Valley. And so I had an agent when I was a kid and started going on auditions and for acting, started acting classes in theater when I was 9, I think, and did a lot of soap operas and after school specials and TV shows and low budget movies. But for voice acting, I think my first thing was an OnStar. I was the OnStar operator for Tiger Woods and Jeff Gordon. There was a lot of these celebrity OnStar commercials in 2007. So I've been doing on camera much longer than I've been voice acting.
Did you do the Batman ones?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
Okay, because there was some OnStars with Batman a couple years ago. Okay,
Is it still contractual if they press the OnStar button in their cars, you have to answer or no? That's expired now.
Yeah, that's expired.
Yeah, I don't think they're letting Tiger near too many cars right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, he probably pushed it just somewhat recently.
Yeah.
At least not without a spare windshield. Yeah.
Luckily, I made a lot of money on that commercial before he did what he did.
Right.
And they pulled the commercial, but Jeff Gordon one kept running. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tiger.
Yeah. Taylor, bring us on.
I mean, voice acting, the Rebels would have been the start of it. That was the first gig in that. But I think I did my first film when I was about 13 or so, and then I was on a show from there. And so I started about that age.
Yeah, there you have it. Linda, thank you. Great question. I think we have time for one more. Let's see if we can go out on a really fun one. And this one comes from Tom. If you wanted to be a contestant on a game show, past or present, what would you like to be on?
God, Hollywood Squares, when Paul Lynde was on. And
yes.
Oh, that game show was so hilarious then, you know. I'm going to get a square. All right. I'm an X, you're an O. Like, it was so funny. Hollywood Squares just killed me.
I'll watch those on YouTube sometimes just for the heck of it. Like the older ones are so good. All
I wouldn't be able to stop laughing, but I'd want to be on.
Yeah.
So.
I know Henry Winkler owns the rights and he's trying to bring it back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd be between, I'm just trying to think of what would help me out. Jeopardy, it'd be cool if I could do that, but I probably wouldn't do well. Or like Survivor.
There you go.
That's too much work.
Yeah, I'm up for it right now.
Yeah, I think it'd be Jeopardy for me, and I would just go down in spectacular flames.
Yeah,
I would just screw every answer up. I would try to be so. I'd go for the all-time negative amount of points.
Jim has negative 3,257,000 for this next question.
The value of the board is only 42,000. We don't.
They don't let you leave. They want a check right there. You have to cut them if it's negative. You have to actually.
And
you actually have to pay.
Surprisingly, Jim, that's not the answer.
Yeah. What the?
I would have to say
Merman wasn't the answer. Yeah. Damn. That's it. Then I would answer every question with the same answer.
Yeah.
Ethel Merman.
And then Final Jeopardy, it's right, but you don't write it as a question, so you still get it wrong.
Right. Ethel Merman?
Right.
With a question mark. Merman.
And actually, accidentally, Jim won by answering the same every time.
The question was, what is the least likely answer? Ethel Merman?
Great things coming up. Happening. Julie, what you got?
I think I would like to go on the $25,000 pyramid.
Ooh, yeah.
Or Password. The Password is.
Oh, yes.
I loved that. Yeah. With Alan Ludden. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Password is Betty White.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because with inflation, it's now the $2.5 million pyramid.
Right.
Crazy. Yeah.
They just keep bringing it back.
Matthew, what you got?
To get those winnings,
I'm going with Jason. Hollywood Squares. I love that. All the personalities. I just love seeing Hollywood legends up there just having fun, and I just it's just wonderful to watch, and I'd love to be part of that.
I have to admit, I'm more of a Match Game guy.
Oh yeah, that's good too. That
it's really weird too, because it's like Marvel and DC. It's like you either love Match Game or Hollywood Squares. It's like
traitor.
Sorry, Charles Nelson Reilly, baby.
Oh yes, damn, he was. Oh,
Matthew, would you want to be in the square or would you want to be a contestant?
I mean, I could never. No, I'm not. That's too hallowed ground for me. I'd have to. Yeah, if it was a Star Wars one, maybe.
There you go. Yeah.
They could do it. Anyone remember? You can find on YouTube the kids' version of Hollywood Squares.
No,
it's worth checking out. You had actors as so you had Joan Rivers as Mother Goose, and you had William Shatner as Captain Kirk.
No, and
whoa!
This is a thing.
YouTube it. It's amazing.
How the heck did I miss that?
I think it blipped for like one season, and oh no, it was And Joan Rivers doesn't hold back. No, she wasn't Mother Goose. She was Old Mother Hubbard, and she literally says, "It's like, I thought you inserted the pill. You didn't swallow it. You know, I mean, yeah."
Wow.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And we wonder why children didn't turn out so good in the
days. I'm Gen X, so everything changed for us when George Lucas came down from Mount Sinai with a film canister saying Episode 4.
Right.
And Tom, thank you for a great question. And GalaxyCon viewers, this has been my time with the voices of Star Wars. But panelists, has been an absolute delight. Any final words before we take our leave?
Thank you.
May the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you.
May the Force be
with you.
May the Fourth.
May the Fourth. Right.
May the Fourth be with you. And if that doesn't work, may the Revenge of the Fifth.
My friend D.
501st. Nice.
Oh,
shout out to the 501st.
Always a shout out to our friends at the 501st. Ah.
Oh, God.
Big shout out.
Ooh, oh, Rebel Legion. Oh, look at yours.
That's so much swag.
Yeah.
When you go to Comic Cons, a lot of swag.
Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely. Well, friends, once again, it's been my absolute pleasure to host you. Once again, thank you for joining us on the GalaxyCon virtual stage. Thank you to our audience for joining us, and thank you for your great questions. Hope to see everybody again soon. Until then, bye-bye, take care, and remember, smiles are free. Spend them often.